It's the food mensch, Arthur Schwartz. We are excited. Hello, Arthur.
Hello, hello. I am sitting in my little office off the kitchen, surrounded by cookbooks that nobody wants. I have been trying to, let me say this. I have an enormous quantity of cookbooks. I've never actually counted, but I know it's in the thousands. And this is a collection that I have honed down over the many years. When I moved from Connecticut, which is where they were all housed at one point, I sold off what I considered the junk. I hauled it all down to Lynbrook, Long Island, which is right over the border from Brooklyn, to my friend's cooking school, and we held a big, big, big sale. Then again, I sold off a lot of books when I moved here to Brooklyn, because how many books can you have? I have three rooms with books. I have my office, which is literally lined with bookshelves. I have a wall of books, actually a wall and a half of books in the dining room. And then I have another two big bookcases full of books in the bedroom. The bedroom books are reading books, not cookbooks, not books to cook from. All the other books are books to cook from, if you want to cook from them, or collectibles. And you would think that they would have some value in this day. But I watched you ever watch the Antiques Roadshow? I watched the Antiques Roadshow. I even recorded it. And I noticed that pretty much everything since the early 2000s has gone down in price. So my book's probably worth almost nothing. Especially now that you say to somebody, oh, come take a look at my cookbooks and take haul off whatever you want. They say, oh, I go online to find recipes. Well, even I go online to find recipes. But I have to say there's nothing beats a cookbook. And I love when I go to look for a recipe in a cookbook, and I get lost in the cookbook. That's a great pleasure for me.
I was just going to say that I have not ever had the same experience online looking at a recipe, except rejecting it, as I have in a cookbook. Getting they're wonderful rabbit holes, and they're so inspiring. So,
yeah. And also, I'm a cookbook writer myself, so I have a lot of friends who are or were cookbook writers. Let me make a little mention of dear Marie Simmons, just passed away. She lived in California most of her life, but I knew her very well. She was one of the most accomplished cookbook writers we've ever had. I must say that at one point I said, okay, I'm only going to keep books written by my friends. Well, I guess I have too many friends, because it's still an overwhelming number of cookbooks here. And then there are other categories that I can't part with. Anyway, this is all, by the way, prompted by a new cookbook store in the East Village. Now I'm going to have to... the owner's name is Troy Chatterton. And you can look him up if you like. He's on TikTok already. In fact, another Brooklyn boy, Isaac Mizrahi, is apparently a friend of Troy's, and did a TikTok about the store, giving a little tour of the store, which was very nice, because I haven't had a chance to go down to the store yet. In any case, Troy just opened last month, and is going to be coming here to look at what I have, and I'm hoping we'll take away boxes and boxes of books, and then I can send you to a bookstore to buy my books. But I've written seven books. Ugh, I get tired thinking about it. Let me say, this is the rundown. My first book was called Cooking in a Small Kitchen, because indeed, when I was writing the book, I had a small kitchen. It was inspired by a book called Cooking in a Bedsitter, an English cookbook, a paperback that I had. I said, oh, bedsitter. God, I live in an 18 by 11 but room. I should one room. So I that was a bed sitter. So I wrote that because back then in my 20s, you had to write a cookbook to be taken seriously as a food writer. So I wrote Cooking in a Small Kitchen, which I was doing. By the time the book came out, though, I had a bigger kitchen. Not a big kitchen, but bigger than the bed sitter kitchen. The next book I wrote was What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat, which is the title, except that I wanted the title Emergency Meals, which I thought was easier on the tongue. But in fact, that book was actually published twice. And I'm not going to go into that whole story, but it was published twice. Then I wrote Soup Suppers, because by then I was living in Cornwall, and I wanted to build a carport. So the third book, Soup Suppers, was for the carport. And by the way, Soup Suppers remains my bestseller. What does
and
that
what
mean?
Happened?
It means I made $63 on it last year. I'm sorry, Jill, what?
I said, excuse me, what happened to the carport?
It's still there.
I'm teasing, but we know how I feel about Soup Suppers. So
I know. I must say, you're not alone. Even I still cook from Soup Suppers from time to time. Yep. In fact, I was just going to look at it today because I think I have a recipe for Tom Yum Soup. And I'm into Tom Yum soup. And that's a Thai soup flavored with the typical Thai flavorings of lemongrass, galangal, and a lot of lime juice. They use a lot of lime juice. Anyway, then I decided I needed to write something serious, something from my heart, something that nobody had written about because I don't know why, but there was prejudice against the food of Naples and southern Italy at that time. Mr. Bob likes to tell people that I created the current craze for southern Italian food. No longer is it demonized. It's no longer just red sauce food. Anyway, so I wrote Naples at Table. That took me a long time because I really delved into the whole deal. We spent a lot of time in southern Italy. We spent a lot of time in Naples. That's where we met Cecilia Barata, La Baronessa. It was during that research for that trip. And we became lifelong friends. And I have a lot of friends from that period in my life who I miss because we're not going to Italy, so readily anymore. Then I wrote a book really from my heart, New York City Food. And I wrote that because one thing, I had collected a lot of menus and visual material. Postcards are great visual material. They don't give out postcards so much in restaurants anymore, but back in the day, as they say, a postcard was your automatic souvenir from a visit to a good restaurant, or even a bad restaurant, even a diner. So I had a huge collection, I still have a huge collection, of New York City restaurant postcards dating back to the 19th century. And some of them are just drawings. Dinty Moore's, there's one. Any case, I wanted to put those into a book. And I did. It's called New York City Food. It has my picture on the cover. I wish I was that young now. And I don't want to be too young, by the way. We had this conversation with the other day with a friend who's in the mid-30s, late-30s, and he was wishing for his 20s. I said, don't wish again for your 20s. I remember you in your 20s. You should be looking forward to your 40s. In any case... that is what my publisher liked to call, and we ended up putting it on the cover, an opinionated history with recipes. And it is a history of New York City as told through food, dating back to Native Americans and what they taught the original Dutch settlers of New York. You know, people don't acknowledge readily, except if you live here, that Brooklyn is really a very Dutch place. I mean, even the name Brooklyn is Dutch, and many of our street names are Dutch, and our neighborhoods have Dutch names. Flatbush, Flatlands, Midwood. I don't know how you pronounce it in Dutch, but it's originally a Dutch word. And Brooklyn, you know, has had its day and not its day and its day, and I guess it's having its day again. But in this book, I stopped, you know, it is a history. So it sort of stops in the mid-80s, which is when I think history stopped. The rest of it is current, although not so current anymore. And the city has changed since that book was published. I would say that there was no Korean food to speak of in the early 2000s. Now, a Korean, various kinds of Korean, not just barbecue, but Korean wings. I have a Korean wings shop right down the street from me in Park Slope. What else? And I would say Asian food has become the number one, the king. Well, maybe it's the queen. The king still may be Southern Italian food, Neapolitan and Sicilian-derived Italian-American food from other regions as well. Calabria, my butcher, for instance, is from Calabria, and he does prepared foods in the butcher shop, and they're all, you know, of Calabrian descent. So that has changed. Red sauce food is king again. Asian food is queen. Asian, not just Thai and Chinese, but Vietnamese, Malaysian, even, I have to say this is Asian light, but Filipino food. All these things have come around in the last 20 years or so. Things have changed. So my cookbooks, I have to say, reflect, my collection reflects the changes. I always remember when in the 80s, early 80s, when American regional food became the thing, my shelf of American books went from practically a half a shelf, I would say, to several shelves. And the reason I have so many books, by the way, is I was a food editor for 30 years. And the publishers send all the books to food editors so that they can get publicity in the paper. Things I'm not going to part with. I thought about this a lot. What I won't part with. I won't part with the Women's Day Encyclopedia. If anybody has a full set, it's 12 volumes of the Women's Day Encyclopedia of Cooking, you should keep it. I'm sure it's collectible by now. I'm going to find out exactly what a complete set is worth. But I have to say, my friend and mentor, Nika Hazelton, who has a Sharon, Connecticut connection, you know that? You know about that?
Yes.
Okay. Nika's dear, dear friends with the Buckleys from Sharon. Anyway, that was edited by Nika, and because she had access to just about everybody who was writing about food in the country, she got the absolute best experts on every subject to do their subject. So really, the book, I can't even start enumerating all the food writers of the day who were in that encyclopedia. The other set, two more sets that I'm not giving up, are the Time Life books that were edited by Richard Olney. Richard Olney is legendary. They're called the Good Cook series. I just picked one off the shelf, and it's the candy one. By subject, beef and veal, I see, salads. I mean, these are invaluable to me.
Agree.
They were edited. Pardon me?
I said agree.
Agree. Oh, you have them? Time Life.
No, I never made it through. That was something I always wanted, is the full set.
I'm sure you can find it somewhere.
Yeah, I'm
not,
sure
it's
I can.
It's not going to be in the bookstore so quick.
Yeah.
Anyway, and the third set is the Time Life International Cookbooks, which came a book and then a spiral-bound book with the recipes. And I think I have all of them, but maybe I'm missing one looking now. Maybe I'm missing one Spiral Bound, but otherwise I have all of them. These three sets take up only one, what is it, 30-inch shelf. And that's, it looks very nice on the shelf, too, because they were all meant to go together. I have a lot of books that I bought when I was writing my New York City book because I wanted to learn about the food of all these old restaurants for which I had postcards. And so I have I don't know, must be at least 10 feet, maybe more, maybe 12 feet of shelf space just devoted to old New York City restaurant cookbooks. And one of them, I have to find it now. I'm not giving up so quickly. It's a copy of the Sardi's cookbook that was given to Joe Baum, the great restaurateur and restaurant consultant. Joe Baum was about to buy Sardi's. That deal never went through. But George Lang, his contemporary and buddy, not such a buddy, but a contemporary, they respected each other. George Lang, who is the owner of Cafe des Artistes, took a copy of Sardi's, but George had an enormous cookbook collection. So this was probably right out of, off his shelf. He took the Sardi's cookbook and inscribed it to George Lang. I'm sorry, George Lang inscribed it to Joe Baum. And I have that. Somehow I ended up with this book, the Sardi's cookbook, George Lang's copy inscribed to Joe Baum. And I don't know if that's, nobody remembers these people anymore. That's the problem. Now, George Lang, I won't give up his cookbook. He was Hungarian. He got through the war, and he tells the story, by the way, very, very amusingly, as George always did. I always called him the most charming man alive. Nobody knows the truffles I've seen. That's the name of his autobiography. Nobody knows the truffles I've seen. And I don't know how much of it is true, but it's a great tale. And George owned Café des Artistes and made it into sublime, I would call continental restaurant. It wasn't French, it wasn't, it was European, so it was continental. And they did have Hungarian specialties. And George wrote the definitive Hungarian cookbook, still in print as far as I know. I have to find out, but I have more than one copy of it. Pardon me?
I'm just looking. Is it called the Cafe des Artistes cookbook?
No, that would be another cookbook. No, this was Hungarian food or something easy like
Yeah,
that.
no, because that's I did just Amazon linked me to that, and because I was looking at George Lang, thinking about what you said, I hope that there are more, shall we call them, historians out there who will teach themselves these names because they are important to the they're important to the story. Just like I gave a note to self, get it back. I think it was New York City food of yours to a friend,
Yeah.
and I didn't talk to her for weeks because like I said, I think I have to get it back. But she w got so fascinated by it started with William Greenberg and Schnecken, okay? But she got so fascinated by the stories behind the recipes of the people, stories of the people behind the recipes,
George is
that,
in the book, by the way.
okay, well, like as I have now said, I think seven times, I have to get back and I'll look it up. But just know that those little pieces of history are out there, and you just never can tell who's going to, oh, yes, and who recalls those things.
Well, Troy's new cookbook store is called Wild Sorrel Book Cookbooks. Wild Sorrel, Sorrel, the herb, cookbooks. And he's on East 13th Street. I don't know the cross street, but far east, I understand. So if anybody's in Manhattan and wants to browse a new cookbook store, and he carries both new and old cookbooks. So, and I think some pottery as well. We'll see.
Apropos sorrel, totally random. Can you substitute sorrel for lemongrass?
No. I mean, they both have a citric edge, but lemongrass is a very particular aroma. You don't eat lemongrass usually either, by the way. And if you have trouble finding lemongrass, I don't know what to do. There must be a substitute, but I don't know what I would use.
Okay, I was thinking because, you know, I had a bunch of sorrel a long time ago. Made sorrel soup, but picking out the sorrel hairs was not so much so enjoyable as it could have been.
I don't know. I, by the way, have in fact picked wild sorrel. I know where it grows here in Brooklyn, along the coast, along Jamaica Bay, in Marine Park. Well, I would say Breezy Point is a cleaner place, but Breezy Point is Queens, but it's right over the bridge over Jamaica Bay, which we used to call the Marine Park Bridge. Now it's called the baseball player's name, Gil Hodges Bridge.
Uh-huh.
And it leads from Brooklyn to the Rockaways. And if you make a right turn, there's a national park right there, and there's a lot of wild sorrel growing. But anyway, Wild Sorrel is also the name of this cookbook store. And I wish him well. He's the third, as far as I know, cookbook store in Manhattan. There's one, the Kitchen Arts and Letters on the Upper East Side, in the 90s on Lexington Avenue. And there's Bonnie Slotnick, who's also in the East Village somewhere. Liz Young was here in Brooklyn, but she is now only online. I don't think she had enough foot traffic or the same kind of bricks and mortar kind of store thing. So she's only online now, and she carries mainly very collectible cookbooks. I mean, expensive cookbooks. I have some expensive cookbooks. I have one that's, I don't know, it's a treasure. It is a handwritten cookbook by what's called a monsieur. The monsieur were French-trained chefs that worked for the Neapolitan aristocracy, including the royalty. And there are still people who consider themselves monsieur in Naples. The caterers like to use the title monsieur. And they do make, I have to say, elaborate food, elaborate Southern Italian food, like various kinds of timbali, which are either pasta enclosed in vegetables or pasta enclosed in pastry. I make one with pastry. Actually, I like a lot, but it's a lot of work, so I only do it for special occasions. Anyway, cookbooks. So if you have cookbooks, you love cookbooks, you should know that you probably can buy old cookbooks for very little because almost nobody wants them.
Bring back
even
cookbooks.
I have a lot of pottery that I would love to display more, look at more. And so I need to clear a few more shelves of books.
All right.
Okay.
Books.
Anyway.
And books. Cookbooks. All
books
right.
And well, cookbooks and magazines. Here's something I have that really, I have the minutes, the published bound minutes from an Italian, for want of a better word, gourmet society. It's how I met some of my Italian friends through this organization that I used to participate in here in New York. But now I have all these books of minutes. I also have a magazine no longer published called Gastronomica, which has essays by some of the best food writers. So anyway, the Academy of Italian Cuisine is the name of the organization. I'm hoping to have a whole cart full of stuff I've already picked out as up for grabs. So I want someone
Well,
to grab them.
that's
I'm going to get emails saying I'll come to your house and do this, but just to say I'm not allowing strangers in my house.
No, I understand. And to
Yeah,
this
yeah.
point, people need to, if people want to come, they can.
Right.
We've
Well,
gone through this. So,
we have,
anyway.
we have. So off we go.
Off we go. Good luck with your distribution, books, and
yes.
more books. And I am a huge
And by the
fan
way,
of.
I have to say, just for myself, that a couple of my books are still in print, or at the very least, you can buy them on eBay. But New York City Food is still in print, and Soup Suppers is still in print. And the one that I'm saddest about not being in print is Naples at Table, which is only available digitally, although there are some old copies out there. And I guess New York City
Or you
Food
can
is
call
taking.
me.
Why? Do you have a lot of copies?
No, but I have one.
Oh, I have one. You know, I only
You have
actually
one too,
Naples at
right?
Table, I think I have three. The one that I
So.
only have one of is Southern Italian Table, which went out of print almost as soon as it was published. But it, too, by the way, is available digitally from Amazon. And the fact is, I published that myself, not the publisher. So if you want to make me poor, I get $6 a book. Never going to get rich on that. Everybody have a book-filled week, and I will talk to you again next week when I have a report.
And we thank you. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.